Becoming a well-rounded person in our modern society is no easy task, never mind finding your true purpose in the process. Thus, at School of Human Potential Radio, we invite world-renowned experts for a discussion on how to achieve both and lead a healthy, wealthy, and fulfilling life. Topics are all over the mind, body, and spirit spectrum, and guests range from Lisa Williams to Yakov Smirnoff and everyone in between. Listen live, call in, and allow us to help you reach your full potential. Here's your host, Alan Weisberg.
And welcome, everyone, to the inaugural show of School of Human Potential. I am your host, Alan Weisberg, and I thank everybody for tuning in to our live taping today. This is not our normal time. We would normally be having live shows every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, and I think I just left out Mountain, so that would be 6 p.m. Mountain. Thank you very much once again for coming in. If you'd like to, since this is a live show and I love doing live format, that's why we're back at it, you can call us at 888-627-6008. The phone lines are open. There's no particular time that you have to wait until. Just give us a call. I will be speaking for the first segment, then I will have the pleasure of welcoming Kim Seltzer, an image and dating expert from Elite Image Makeovers. We're going to be talking about all things for single people, for married people, for newly single, used to be married people. So if you fall into any of those categories, you should stay with us for those conversations. So call in, ask questions. But before we begin with all of that, I wanted to introduce the show and myself to you. It's been a very interesting year, and I find that ironic that this is the last show that we're doing of year 2013, because in 2013, this is when I began my radio career. It began with a very small station on Blog Talk Radio with a very good friend of mine, and the show was called Living Your Essence, because that is exactly what I was trying to do at that time. I was and still am, we can count me still in that category, but I was a very successful entrepreneur. I've built over the last 15 years a number of IT consulting businesses that I built from nothing. By nothing, I mean I didn't even have an idea, to marketing, to advertising, to sales, to actually doing support and consulting. So I built them from nothing into something that was generating more than $1 million a year for every one of those companies. And I was very happy doing that until about 2 years ago, when I started feeling that for all of my successes, I really wasn't fulfilled. Something was still missing. And it was hard for me to understand exactly what that was, because I knew growing up as a child, I never thought about going into IT. That was not something that I wanted to do. What I wanted to do was being an actor and a professional tennis player and a speaker, teacher, and do things that don't involve a standard 9-to-5 job. But coming to America at the age of 14 with my parents, who were both 50 years old at the time, with $300 in their pockets, when I mentioned to them that I wanted to be an actor, they said, no, you're going to get a job, and you're going to get a job that will pay you, so you will have a career, and then you can do with it as you wish. So I listened to my parents, and I got a job, and the job was in IT, and then from there I took on, and I said, I can't really work for somebody, I have to start my own, and I started my businesses. So 2 years ago, I realized once again that I was not fulfilled. But what does fulfillment mean? And who was I really to understand what my life was about? Because I was a success story. I was an American success story. Coming in with parents and $300 in your pocket to a multimillionaire in terms of at least revenue. So who was I? What was I all about? Then I said, you know what? At the height of my success, I'm going to quit. Which still sounds ridiculous as I say it, because everybody looked at me probably the same way as you're thinking about it now, of what exactly are you doing? And I didn't know. But all I knew was that I did not want to introduce myself anymore as I am a entrepreneur, owner of IT consulting business or an IT consultant, because that's not who I was. Who I was an author. Who I was a poet. Who I was somebody who loved acting, somebody who loved spirituality, somebody that wanted to do many other things, but I was not an IT consultant. That was my job. That was not me. And something in me really stopped thinking about myself as an IT consultant. So at the end of 2012, I stopped and I decided to find myself. And I was in a position, financially speaking, and with a wife that still is married to me, God bless her, to allow me to do something. So what I did is I went to acting classes, and I went to, being in Chicago, I'm lucky enough to have Second City nearby. So I went and I did improv for a year, and I finished the 1 year program, which I love improv. I went and I took many acting classes until 6 months into it, I realized that acting at its core, as much fun and as much as I loved it, acting at its core was pretending to be somebody else. And I've been pretending somebody else for 37 years and I didn't want to do that anymore. So I stopped acting, even though one of my dreams was to be in a movie. And by that time, I was in a movie. I landed a supporting role in a small picture that was shot in Wisconsin. So I got to be in a movie. I wanted to get my black belt. So I got my black belt in martial arts. I wanted to study spirituality. So I studied with wonderful Lisa Williams and Doreen Virtue. And I had a chance to learn all about myself from that perspective and understand my abilities. So then living your essence was my way of expressing that, because that's what I was doing. And that was the show, Living Your Essence on Blog Talk. That show, after about 6 months, was transferred and rebranded as Recalibrate Your Life, because that started to be the point of my life at that time. I was living my essence. Now I wanted to help somebody else do it. I recalibrated my life. I understood who I was truly. And by the way, who I was a spiritual teacher and speaker. Those were the things that I was about, and I wanted to help others do the same. So I started a consulting business called Recalibrate Your Life, which was guided information from the universe on how to help other people do the same thing as I did. Granted, not everybody has an opportunity to just quit their job and find themselves, and nor does anybody need to do that. You can make small steps or large steps depending on your environment. So Recalibrate Your Life was the show, and it was focused specifically on helping people get in touch with who they really are, their essence, and then realign the life around that purpose so they can enjoy the fruits of their labors and transition out of the jobs or environments that they were not comfortable in, that were not fulfilling to them, into jobs that were wrapped around their true essence. Now we make a final transition into a School of Human Potential Radio. School of Human Potential was an idea that I had about 3 years ago, when I discovered that it's not just about finding who you are, but also about becoming a well-rounded person in the process. Just by knowing who you are does not make you a well-rounded person. And living in our crazy modern world, being a well-rounded person is not an easy thing to do. There are many things that come into it, and we're usually way too busy and don't have enough time nor money to do anything about it. So I wanted to help. And that's why I created School of Human Potential, which, by the way, is officially launching February 25th of 2014. So we have rebranded, and now we are School of Human Potential. So I really see this as a full circle and as a continuation of my growth through that year. Looking back at the year 2013, it's been an incredible year. And that is something that I wish to everybody, for you to have an incredible year, regardless of what it is that you're doing, and we'll give you more wishes for the new year coming up. But on our first show, our inaugural guest, and since we're talking about you finding yourself and being yourself, what better guest to invite than Kim Seltzer, who is an image and dating expert, because she can help us determine what is the image that we're portraying and who we think we are. Does that really show on the outside? Do the people view us in the same way that we chose to be viewed? So when we come back from a short commercial break, we're going to welcome Kim and ask her all sorts of questions dealing with marriage, love, dating, image, and things that will come up. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of all of the negativity in children's fiction? Does your child suffer from night terrors or frequent bad dreams? Do you wish there was a series for your child to read that is fun and inspirational? The Wish Flower Field, Marie's Triumph, is a fanciful book that not only entertains, but builds inner strength. Join the many that have seen the difference this positive book has made in the way their children handle fear. The Wish Flower Field is truly a series that appeals to all ages and empowers within. Visit thewishflowerfield.com for your copy today. That's thewishflowerfield.com.
Hi, I'm Alan Weisberg, founder of School of Human Potential. To help you determine if it is the right thing for you, I'd like to ask you a few simple questions. Do you consider yourself a hardworking, educated, well-informed individual? If so, do you ever find yourself in a situation that you wish you were better prepared for, such as holding your own in a conversation at an art museum or a concert hall? Managing stress? Parenting? Physical confrontation? Or in bed? Truth is, being a well-rounded individual who's prepared for life's many challenges is difficult in our day and age. We are much too busy working, raising families, and trying to carve out a few moments of peace, let alone worry about becoming self-actualized. We get it. The reason for starting the School of Human Potential was to help people like you become well-rounded and self-actualized without taking a lot of time or money. We found and filmed world-renowned experts and put their knowledge into easily accessible online courses spanning various topics of mind, body, and spirit. You can go at your own pace and access them on any device. By taking the courses, here are some of the benefits you can expect. You will broaden your horizons and deepen your understanding of the world and yourself. You will hold your own in a cultural conversation. You'll be able to protect yourself and your loved ones in a life-threatening situation. You'll find peace and meaning in your life. You'll become a better spouse, partner, and lover. You'll be fit, healthy, and financially secure. But if that's not enough, know that the majority of the courses at School of Human Potential are exclusive. You simply won't find them anywhere else. And here's the most amazing part. Outside of the School of Human Potential, you would expect to pay thousands of dollars for this information and spend countless hours learning it. However, when you enroll with us, you will pay less than $100 per course, and each one takes up to 8 hours. To start, go to www.schoolhp.com. Our hope is that you allow us to take you on a journey leading to a new and improved you. Here's to you reaching your full potential. And welcome back to School of Human Potential Radio. Thank you so much for being with us on our inaugural show, on our live taping of the first show that will actually air on the first of the new year on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific. It is my distinct pleasure to welcome somebody who I have admired from afar, who was a Facebook friend, and then we started communicating more, and I've learned a great deal about her, and I really want you to welcome Kim Seltzer. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Alan.
Nice to speak to you again. How's sunny California?
It's amazing here. It's 80 degrees. I cannot complain, and I'm so okay with it being a green Christmas.
Well,
for me.
That's another way of doing it. And I, as a matter of fact, just came back from sledding because it's about 34 degrees and beautiful, sunny, snowy outside in Chicago, and we were sledding on a hill for about 2 hours, so it was great here as well.
See, it's all about perspective, right? I mean, isn't that what we're talking about?
It's true, right. It's isn't true. What the image is tied to? You know, your perspective of yourself and how your outward appearance is really just the mirror of who you are on the inside.
Absolutely. See how we segued into that?
Amazing. I know. Yeah, I'm learning about this radio business. I'm getting better, I think.
Yeah, no. And I really enjoyed hearing your story because I was listening to it and thinking about my own story and how I got into doing what I do. And I feel like we all have life experiences that kind of catapult us into what we're passionate about. And some of us fulfill it and some of us don't. And that's why I love what you're doing to really empower people to get into what they love.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's not easy. It certainly is an interesting road to travel, but one that's well worth the traveling.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and to be honest, that's how I got into doing what I'm doing, for sure. I mean, you know, in my previous life, I was a therapist. And I say previous because it really was like a different life. And honestly, I learned so much and I feel like I helped a lot of people. And in fact, when I was living in Chicago, at the time, and I had private practice and worked in the hospitals. And I think there's a lot of value in talking things through and analyzing, but the thing that was for me missing is not many people took action. A lot of people would talk, and a lot of us at this day and age, we kind of know our issues, right? It's like, at this point, what do you do about them? It's kind of the how-to, and that's what I really like about the stuff that I do with people now, is it's empowering people to do the how-to so that they get to the next step, they get the results they want, and all of that. But to be honest, really what empowered me the most and why I'm passionate is that I had my own transformation occur, because when I moved from Chicago to California, I was married at the time, and I always joke, I probably had a Leave It to Beaver kind of, you know, situation with the picket fence and the little bungalow, and you know those areas, right, Alan? So
yes,
I had a couple kids and everything seemed hunky-dory, and then we moved to California, and I always joke we did what all the other Californians do. We got a divorce, and then, oh my God, there I was. I'm like, okay, I have two kids. I'm single. I have to figure out how to date again and look good doing it. So, you know, the big oversized clothes, the muumuus and the nursing bras and the Birkenstocks just wasn't going to cut it. That just wasn't happening if I was going to, you know, get back out there, so to speak. And also just coming into my own again, you know, figuring out what it was that I wanted to do with my life, you know, that was separate from my partner, because at the time, you know, I'd been married for many years. Your identity kind of gets wrapped up in the couplehood, so to speak. So that's where kind of my journey ended and began, and really thrusted me into what I'm doing today.
I see. So I'm making a few notes here. Not moving to California.
Note to self.
Note to self, yes. And note to my wife who's listening. Honey, I love it in Chicago. Love it, love it, love it. Isn't there...
it's easy to blame. Look, it's easy to blame California. Obviously there were other issues happening, and it was just...
You just wanted to get out of the hospitals, because you probably learned a lot about dating from watching people in the hospitals, and that's one of the reasons why you moved.
How did you know? Oh, my God.
Yeah, stupid joke. But as you were talking about hospitals, it came to mind. I wrote it down. I just had to work it in there, whether it worked or not.
It was that improv thing that's coming out. I get it.
Well, actually, no. This is the against improv, because – and by the way, you know, Kim finished the second city as well. Isn't that the whole point of improv? Do not pre-plan anything. Just go with the flow, whatever
exactly.
is the last thing that the person said. I am breaking rules of improv on the show. I hope nobody's listening from a second city. I did want to ask you a question, getting back to it. You did have your transformation, yeah. And you know, obviously you had it in L.A. Was there a different feel? And I know, obviously, you know, you dated in Chicago when you were younger and then moved to L.A., so there was a period of time between there. But did you find Chicago and L.A. in terms of the dating scene different?
Interesting question, and I get that a lot, because I actually service clients all over the U.S. and actually out of the country, too. And dating is different in different towns, different countries. There's different expectations, different age groups that we're dealing with. The reason why it's hard to, first of all, answer that question directly, I'm not avoiding it, but there was just so many variables. You have to remember, I was 19 when I met my husband. So we're talking... You know, when I was dating, toga parties, I was in a sorority, like it was a different time, you know, and I think that was part of the problem, is I didn't take the time to really like date, get to know myself, before moving into that. But, fast forward to now, you know, dating here in LA, well, first of all, people are getting married later and later here, at least. And so it's perfectly acceptable to be in your late 30s, early 40s and never have been married. Where in Chicago, that was almost unheard of. And I don't know if it's still like that today, but Chicago seems to be a little more, you know, conservative, and people get married a little bit younger. So there's, again, different expectations with each town and what's kind of culturally acceptable. But you know, what I find, and I think, Alan, you and I had talked about this, and what I often tell clients is that when you have dated when you were in your 20s, and this is for people who are getting back out there, I want to use this metaphor, this pond metaphor, is that you were fishing in a pond where most of the fish looked pretty similar, okay? Maybe they varied in color. As the fisherman, you threw in your pole. If you got a fish, you didn't like it, you threw it back. But everyone's pretty much in the same place. The problem is, as the fisherman, you're not that experienced, okay? So you think you're picking the right one, but maybe not. Fast forward to the pond now and getting back out there. Maybe it's like, I'm talking about 40 plus in age. Mm-hmm. You think that the pond should be how it was when you were in your 20s, but you throw in your pole and, oh my God, the fish look different. Some have three eyes, some have a gill missing. It's a completely different ball game because, look, we've all had life experiences now that we didn't have in our 20s. The good news is that we know who we are as the fishermen, though. So we can really make a choice on who we want to, you know, proceed with.
Are you sure that's not the LA dating scene with the three-eyed monsters and everybody else? Is that all around the country?
I think I saw that in Homer Simpson. Maybe that's where I got it. I don't think it was just California. But yeah, it could be.
No, that's a very good point. And obviously, I'm in a situation where I have no idea what the dating scene in Chicago is like. I got married at 24. By the way, second note to self, my wife was 19 when we got married. But we did date for 2 years prior to that fact. So I'm hoping there was enough time for her to get to know me. Although I keep changing myself, so I'm not sure if she really does know me or not.
But wait a second. Wait, yeah. To that point, though, I actually love that you just said that because part of what I want to talk about today is keeping things interesting and fresh. Mm-hmm. And maybe by you changing and keeping things different for the two of you also kept things fresh and energized, you know, in a way that you guys grew together on that point. Because I think that's amazing. I wanted to find out what your secret is with you and your wife. I think it's great.
I can share a few secrets, actually, and I like how you said growing together, because that actually is one of our secrets. And we've learned from watching other couples, and again, when I was growing up, I really didn't have any girlfriends. I was always the friend, not the boyfriend. And then I really didn't have any serious relationships before. And then my wife and I met. She didn't have many serious relationships before either, at least that I know of. We dated for a couple of years, then we got married, and we've been growing together. So what we've observed from other couples is that when you get married young, it's very difficult because people start realizing who they are and they start growing in a certain direction. If you don't allow the other person to grow or you're growing apart, then your relationship is going to suffer. So what we've been doing very, very specifically is we allowed each other to grow in our directions, but always supported the growth. So if my wife was interested in certain spiritual concept, or she wanted to go, try a activity, then I would be fully supporting that. If it was something that I hated, I would not be fully supporting, let's go and do this forever, but I would still be supporting it. I would go with her. If she was reading the book, then I would be there reading with her because she would want to have me as a bouncing board and to share her experiences. Same thing with her. I mean, God, look at all the things that I've been doing that she's been supporting me on. So growing together was a very, very specific thing that we started from the very beginning of making sure that we allow each other space and support the growth in the directions that we're going.
I love that. And you know what's wrapped up in that too, that I think you're bringing out and is so important for couples, is respect. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, you may change and you may have different interests than your partner, but if you can respect that person and you build a foundation on that, you can really build a strong relationship and get through a lot of hard times. So,
yeah,
that's wonderful.
No, because it really goes into the whole place. And the reason why, I'm not going to say the reason, but one of the reasons why, certain relationships don't work out is people get, people meet up very early in life and they fall in love. They have this wonderful euphoric stage. They potentially fall in love because they love the way the other person looks. And maybe or maybe not, but some people don't look the same way 10 or 20 years down the road as they did when they were 19 or 20. So if that was the reason why you're in with that person, then that is a potential no-no. You should be with the person not just because of their looks. You should be with a person because that is a person that you respect, that is your friend, somebody that you admire, somebody that completes you, and they're different from you. So both of you teach each other things. So there has to be a lot to it.
But what if he looks like George Clooney? Is that a bad thing to really want that?
No. He's actually on my top five list. Sorry. No, George is awesome. If he looks like George Clooney, God bless you, ladies. Go for it, because I hear he's also a very nice guy.
He is. I actually met him at a party, and I will vouch for that. He's an amazing guy. Yeah, that's true.
Excellent. Next time you're going to that party, can I please be a part of that as well? I'm happy to fly down to LA.
I'll bring your wife with. I'm sure.
Bring my wife. Absolutely. I'm sure that that will be enough of a reason for her to go to LA.
No, but you know what? All joking aside, and I'll just say this as you're talking, that there's also a lot of studies about, you know, with how when we're younger, we do look at looks a lot more than when we were older. But biologically, it kind of makes sense because our brain is looking to procreate, right? So we may not even be aware of it, but we are. We're looking for, you know, someone we can procreate with and make babies. And so we kind of get caught up in the looks, and we are a little more shallow. Now, as we get older, it shifts over time, although there is differences between men and women upon first impressions, and we'll get into that as well.
No, that's true. But it's from my experience, and again, observing other people, because I had friends who, you know, gotten married, got divorced. I had friends who, you know, took a long time to get married. You tend to see these patterns, and you tend to see that the relationships that continue are relationships that are based more than on just one thing. Either, you know, some people got married because it's a wonderful provider for them. Other people got married because of looks. It really has to be a combination and a balanced approach, like I guess with everything in life. It's an investment. You're making an investment into your life, and you should have more than one egg in that basket, I guess.
Absolutely. You know, when I used to do matchmaking, and I did that for a while, I would do something called a chemistry analysis, because we do get caught up in different things when we first meet somebody, and then over time it does change. And what I found is that chemistry is really comprised of four components. Mm. You have the intellectual, you have the emotional, you have the physical, and then you have spiritual. And what I found is that when I asked people to put a percentage in each of those domains, like even if they were to chart it out like a pie, it was interesting to me what they were placing value in, especially, you know, initially. And what I found is that the relationships that had each quadrant more evenly distributed are the ones that did make it over time. It's to your point, is that, you know, if you have more like a 25, 25, 25, 25 percentage, that's going to be something that's going to last, because you have more substance. Because you're right, over time, looks do change. And how you felt in the beginning is going to change. So if you don't have those other components, what else do you have to keep things going? So, yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing to look at.
Perfect. One other thing I wanted to add to that, because you asked me about my secret. So here's the second secret.
Yes.
Gary Chapman's book, The Five Love Languages.
Oh, I love it.
That was the second secret, because my wife, in her infinite wisdom, and I'm not joking here at all, found this book somehow. And this was early on at the beginning of our marriage. And we read that book, and we quickly realized that we, like many other couples, are speaking different love languages. Whereas, you know, I need physical touch and words of affirmation. She's much more of, what have you done around the house? Are you helping me in the household? She doesn't care about the lovey-dovey things as much as I do. So once we realized that, we knew how to adjust. And that was one of the secrets. And we keep on talking about the book. You know, fortunately, I just got a chance to speak to Gary a few shows ago. And all of the messages are just as true 14 years into our marriage as they were at the beginning. So those are my secrets.
I love that. So how did you actually shift that? Once you figured out who you each were, then what did you do?
I started doing more things around the house. So that was my shift. Because those were the things that she appreciated. And, you know, my wife certainly took a lot of time in developing me as a man. And I say that proudly because I came from more of a patriarchal kind of a society. My father came from Russia, and he was older. They had me at 37. So the way that he was raised was much more in a patriarchal way, which I already came out thinking that I was very different from that. But when I got with my wife and she made me realize the certain patterns that were developing, I saw how far away I still had to go. So one of the things that I started doing, in addition to things around the house, is really shift and make sure that both my wife and I were 50-50 in this marriage. If she could do things, I had to be able to do those things. And that dealt with everything children-related, everything household-related, to make sure that both of us were partners. Because we were both in a marriage in which both people worked. My wife had her career, I had my career, we both had to put in. So I did a lot of work from that side to adjust to her. And from her side, all I need, when we're talking physical touch, and many people automatically jump to sex, which when I was reading that book initially, I was as well. But it has nothing to do with sex. It's a hug, it's a smile, it's a rub, yeah. It's a, honey, you look great tonight, or I love what you're wearing, or, you really did so well in, whatever you were helping me with. So she had to make a slight adjustment to that because, again, coming from her background, that's not necessarily what she saw, and she wasn't raised that way. So both of us came towards the middle, and I keep reminding myself, this is what she cares about. And I am still me. I'm still the, lovey-dovey, huggy guy. But I make sure that when she asks for something, or even before she asks for something in terms of shopping or in terms of doing things around the house, I force myself to do that because I know that that's what showing love to her means.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I love that. I love that you guys work together on that. And, it does take two to tango for sure.
Absolutely. It certainly does. And, I've taken ballroom classes. One can tango, but not as much fun.
it's a whole other dance.
Yes, very different. So speaking of dancing and speaking of tangoing, body language.
Yes.
Body language is something that's extremely important in attracting the opposite sex, whether you're married, single, or, what would be the third thing I'm looking for? Never mind. Let's just stick with those two. So what about body language? What do people do that you have seen in your practice and what they should be doing?
Oh, it's huge, 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 huge. I mean, part of what I do and what makes me different as a dating coach than some of the other practices is that I actually go out in the field with people. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people call me Hitchette. If you saw Hitch, I'm kind of like the girl version of Hitch. And I watch what's happening. I'm kind of your eyes and ears. It's not like I'm Cyrano de Bergerac hiding in a bush with an ear. No, so you're this. But I'm kind of like your girlfriend, whether you're a guy or a girl, and I'm watching you in action. Because what I was finding, especially as a therapist, is that people would come to me and they say, I've done so much work on myself and I know the issues. And, I'm really open when I go out. I don't understand why I'm not meeting that person and blah, blah. And I pretty much tell people, don't tell me, just show me. And right. So when we go out, I'm seeing exactly what happens. And body language is so huge. I mean, I think it's up to 93% of communication is nonverbal. You think about that, that is pretty powerful. So it's not even what you're saying that's really that important, especially upon this first impression stage. It's mm-hmm. how you're saying it. And, really, there's been a lot of research on, whether or not people will trust you, whether or not you'll attract that person. People will buy what you're saying in terms of decision making. Also, it has an effect on that, is that people are reading different parts of you. Now, in the different sexes, there are signals that each sex gives off that tells one another that we're interested in. And this is really also very interesting because what I'm finding too is that, Alan, how you were saying you were always kind of caught what I would say in the friend zone.
Mm-hmm.
This happens a lot to guys and girls. They're seen as the nice girl, but, or yeah, he's a really great guy, but the whole kind of sexual attraction isn't there for some reason. And what I find is that tweaking some of the body language makes a huge difference. So if you're a woman, a lot of times what I'm not seeing my women do is give the signals to the guy that they're interested. And it's so simple, like a smile, eye contact, just saying hi, like these little things you can do with your face that will invite a man. And I hate to simplify men so much, but really at the end of the day, you guys are really simple. And we as women overcomplicate you. So what I tell women is like, they're more scared of us than we are of them. And my women have a hard time kind of believing that or seeing it until they see how simple it can be. And when you create an energy like that, laughter and smiling and that openness that you're willing to talk to a guy, that's half the battle. So that is the one thing. Now for my men, you know, where you stand with a woman, like the proximity in which you stand, your posture, the way you touch her when you're talking, those also make huge differences. So when I work with people, I kind of work in zones, right? So you have your head, you know, looking at your eyes and your smile, moving down to, you know, your shoulders and your posture. Are you tense? Are you slunched over? Are you crossing your arms? And by the way, crossing your arms is like a big no-no in terms of, like, you know, because it says I'm closed off. You could be freezing your butt off, but to someone else it reads, don't talk to me. It also, now with your moving down the body, just even the way that you walk is huge. Oh my God. I tell my clients all the time, slow down. We live in a society that we're walking really fast, and we are fast paced now. You know, we're in our phones. We're not even aware of what's around us, who's looking at us, stopping and saying hi to people. At least here in LA, it's very much like that. okay. So I just dissed LA. I love LA though. And when you do that, when you actually slow down, you're able to invite energy into you. So you're able to say hi to people. You're able to see who's looking at you. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people are not observant of who's looking at them. So that you're missing things. Like, I'll tell my girls, I'm like, did you just see that guy? He checked you out. She's like, no. Like, completely missing it. So body language is really essential when it comes to, you know, that initial attraction.
Makes perfect sense. And I have so many visuals in my head right now. I can just imagine you there in a bar, and one of your clients, at this case, you know, in this particular vision that I have, is a man, and he's out there talking to a woman. And then you are like a ref. You're throwing the red flag. You're like, wait. No, you're supposed to touch her at this moment. You're supposed to smile. You're supposed to stand a little bit to, 15 degrees this way. What do you do? I mean, you're seeing these people doing the wrong things. Do you call a timeout, or do you basically, you know, kind of wink at them saying, you know, come here, buddy, I want to tell you something?
Yeah, it depends. It depends on the person. It depends on how much time I have with them. Right. It depends on where we are at. If I've spent, like, I do a 2-day intensive, and so if I've spent 2 days with them, they'll know my cues by the end of the weekend, and I'll just like lift an eyebrow, and they'll be like, oh God, I just did it, you know. But actually, a lot of what I do, which has been invaluable to people, is just modeling for them what's supposed to happen. So, you know, if I see a conversation going in one direction or body language in a way that's not working, I'll kind of just step in and do it. And then they'll be like, oh gosh, Kim, I saw what you did. That was a huge difference. I would have never thought of that. So sometimes just seeing it, you know, as kind of like a role model really helps. I often tell people, you know, look at celebrities that, you know, kind of like icons in terms of who has that sex appeal, who has that swagger. So, you know, we've been talking about George Clooney. He's a great example. You know, what if you really watch him, there's so many things he does that's sexy, and it's not even what he says. It's just the way he kind of navigates the room or the screen, so to speak. When I saw him in person, the thing that impressed me the most is no matter who he was with, he was so present with that person that he made like eye contact with every single person in that room, and he really listened. And I, you know, that was just so endearing and sexy to me and to a lot of women, because so many people are not present. And that's another thing I teach people. Like, we just want you to be present and, you know, get out of your head and don't worry about saying the right thing or wrong thing. Just be in that moment. And Alan, you and I learned this in improv. I often go back to improv. You have to be in that moment and not think too much.
So. No, that's perfect. Okay, so another note to self: be Clooney. Got it. So as we're talking about body language, I keep thinking, okay, I'm a radio talk show host. What's the body language for radio?
Oh, for radio. Well, I'm certain that you're in a certain position right now.
I am, and my arms are not closed. I'm very open. I'm smiling, and I'm sending love energy to everybody.
And you're probably smiling. I can kind of hear it in your voice, and you're probably using your hands, and you know, as you're talking. I know I am. So
Okay, good. So we'll take that under advisement. Very, very cool. Well, we have a little bit more time, so I wanted to ask you about, you know, your guide. You know, some people who are no longer single, some people who, like you, you know, went through a divorce. How do they get back out there? What are some of the advices that you would give to them?
Oh, yeah. And, it can be daunting at first when I remember feeling like a deer in headlights. I wrote actually an article about this in the Huffington Post about just getting back to basics. I think the most important thing to do when you're first starting to get back out there is find out who you are again. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is go back to what made you tick. Find your passions again. Find that, you know, kind of thing that will give you that mojo to feel confident. Because at the end of the day, what attracts people to people is confidence. And when you're first divorced, you are not feeling secure. You're not feeling confident. And so you have to do things to feel that again. And don't worry so much about getting back into a relationship. I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is that they try to find a person right away, almost as a band-aid, or to try to have that corrective experience of what they lost. Without really taking a breather and just dating and having fun and being social, because that band-aid can really backfire later on because you're not giving yourself enough time to heal the wound that's underneath the band-aid. So that's the first thing. It's just getting back to basics, get back to feeling good. I often tell people, get back into your body. Improv, I recommend that a lot. I recommend salsa. I recommend dancing. Like, just learn to move and not think so much, you know, when you're – because you have so much on your plate, especially if you have kids, you're dealing with a lot. You're juggling a lot, and it's important. The second thing I would say is get a great group of single friends. And if you don't have them, get them. My life and my clients' lives have changed after they got a couple of single friends. And as nice as you married folk are, you just don't get it. And it's a different energy. It's a different energy when you're going out with married people or coupled off people than when you're with someone single. And also activities and people they are connected with. It like branches out your whole kind of social circle. So really important, both aspects.
Yeah, very true. We don't get it because what we get is, most of the conversations that we have are either about what activities are our children doing and what sports they're in and who's driving whom and how much time do you have and do you actually date? Oh, my goodness. Do you go on dates with your wife? Oh, we haven't done that for years. All right. These are the types of questions that we're dealing with. I want to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to be asking Kim about first impressions. Also, keep in mind that you can call in and ask Kim questions directly at 888-627-6008. We'll take a short commercial break. Please stay with us. Hi, I'm Alan Weisberg with Recalibrate Your Life, and I help people like you find their soul purpose, align with it, and gain the balance that you seek. But don't take my word for it. Take my clients.
Alan, what can I say but wow? I've always had so many questions on whether I'm on the right path, am I fulfilling my life's mission? These are questions that I assume have been pondered by everyone since the beginning of time. However, the gift that you possess has helped me immensely. It confirmed my need to be artistic, my need to help others so much. I can't even explain the experience. It confirmed so much more than I can describe in this small note of appreciation. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak, allowing me to release my inner thoughts, and most importantly, for confirming and leading me to what I always believed but was not confident enough to believe in. Thank you. Trust me, this was hard for me to do, but I do know that God has blessed us with various gifts, and you have an amazing gift. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You, like all of my clients, deserve to live in alignment with your soul purpose. To begin your journey, visit recalibrateyourlife.com or call 800-323-1619. And don't hesitate. Recalibrate. And welcome back to School of Human Potential Radio, where Kim Stelzer and I are having a wonderful discussion about image, dating, and what people really think of themselves and how good-looking George Clooney really is in person.
We're going to rename this program. It's all about George.
I think so. It's the George Clooney Wannabe Radio. I'm okay with that because all kidding aside, I always... And my dad actually happens to look like George Clooney. My dad is older. He's 76 years old.
Wait, is he single? More importantly.
My dad is not single. And unfortunately, I don't look like my dad, but that's fine. but he's, my dad, I always looked at the younger pictures of my dad and George Clooney. And I told my dad there is a lot of similarities there. That being said, speaking of George Clooney, and we know what first impression that he is going to give out. But for those people, and regardless of looks, but those people, because everybody knows who George is, for first impressions, blind dates, or forget dating, just in terms of work or any other environment where you're meeting people for the first time, first impressions are very important. What recommendations would you give to people?
Yeah, I lately I've been called the first impressions girl because I think more times than not, that's really what I'm helping people with. And again, it doesn't matter if they're dating or just trying to change their look, because I also deal with dressing people and kind of revamping their style. And so why first impressions is so important. Look, I mean, you could be the best person in the world, but if you don't present yourself in a way for people to get to know you, then they're not going to get to know that great person that you are. So you have to package yourself in a way that invites people in or is congruent with who you are. So, if it takes 30 seconds to make a first impression, that's all you got. And what happens in the brain, this is what research says, is that it happens so fast that the brain interprets who you are in the world and makes a judgment and assumption on a person based on two things and two things solely. One is your attitude and one is the clothes that you're wearing. And that's it. So pretty powerful. And what excites me about it, sometimes people, and I can hear some people in the audience and even with some of my clients, well, if somebody doesn't like me for who I am, it's my style, then, forget them. I'm like, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, in a way, are you putting yourself out there that's congruent with who you are? Because what you put on your body and how you dress and your nonverbals and your presentation tells a story about you. So why wouldn't you want to put your best foot forward so that people see that part of you? And I use this metaphor a lot. So you have two business packages, right? One is in chicken scratch, written on a manila folder with pencil. And the other one is nicely laminated and it looks presentable. And they both have the same content. Come on, which one are you going to choose? It's the same thing with people. So that's why it's really important, especially when it comes to dating, that you know how to make a great first impression so that a guy or a girl really gets to know you. And what's exciting about it is that it's so easy to tweak and change and really get into. It was funny. I just worked with a police officer from New York this weekend. Last weekend. It was great. I mean, we're talking, he is used to wearing the police uniform, and his clothes were way too big on him because he lost a bunch of weight, and he's single and he wanted to really attract a woman. And oh my God, the clothes that I put on him, he looked like a different person. And you just saw as he was trying these clothes on, the difference it made in his confidence and his body language. And by the end of our weekend together, he was talking to girls left and right, where when he first arrived, he was so anxious about even saying hello. So it really can make a big difference.
No, that's perfect. And clothes do really make the man. I know that there is a part of truth to that very much. You know, from the acting background, you put on the clothes, you become that character. We can go inside or outside, but for me, it really worked well. As soon as I put on the clothes, I got into that energy. I understand what that person is thinking, how they would carry themselves. Clothes really make the man.
They do. And let me tell all the guys out there, we women really look at your clothes. And I'm sorry to say it, but when we see a guy who is put together well and it looks like he cares about his presentation, it is so attractive to us. I did a webisode series. I haven't launched it yet, but I kind of ambushed people in the streets here in Santa Monica, and I asked all the men and women what makes their head turn. And I found it fascinating that every woman I asked, no matter what age they were, what ethnicity, they all said the same thing. A man who is put together and well-dressed. They all said it. And what I think what that really means is that how we interpret that is that the guy cares about what he looks like. He must care about, you know, his household. He must care about other things in his life. And right. He must be successful. That's how we kind of interpret it in our mind. Men, you do the same thing, but you look at sex right upon the first impression. And again, you care about other things along the way, but you look at a woman and you get either sexually attracted to her or not. And if a woman is dressed in a way that's sexy to you and feminine, oh my God. I mean, that's seriously half the battle. I tell my women all the time, if you have a business meeting and you're in a suit, get rid of the suit. Get out of the suit. A guy doesn't want to date another suit. So, you know, get into your feminine energy, get into a dress, wear a pair of heels. I'm sorry, but that's universal across all guys that I'm – unless, Alan, you're an exception.
No. Guilty as charged.
Right. So, again, that's what's exciting is that these are things that you guys – everybody can tweak and have fun with and see what kind of positive results they get out of it.
Well, that's perfect. And speaking of positive results, where can people find you for this beautiful work that you're doing?
Oh, thank you. Well, the easiest is probably to go to my website. It's eliteimagemakoverswithans.com. And there's all kinds of ways that you can get in touch with me. You can also tweet me. It's @SeltzerKimberly is my handle. And also on Facebook, Kimberly Seltzer.
Perfect. Well, Kim, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate your wisdom, your expertise, and your sense of humor. You've been great.
Oh, thank you. Likewise.
Thank you so much. And for everybody who is with us, let me tell you a little bit more about what's coming up next week. And we're going to do another live record. But who we're speaking with is we're continuing with the discussion of our School of Human Potential in the area of marriage, relationships, image, and dating. And I have on Dr. Charles and Dr. Elizabeth Schmitz. They're America's number one love and marriage experts. They will be coming on next week. Please stay tuned to all of the information on our bbsradio.com/schoolhp, on my Facebook page, School of Human Potential. Call me if you want to find out at 800-323-1619, but that's what's coming up next week. What an interesting conversation we had with Kim. I hope, regardless of whether you're married, single, or thinking or leaning one way or another, not that I am, honey, I love you, 14 years, it's been beautiful, I look to 45 years more at least. But looking at the discussion about image and dating, everybody should be able to take something from it. Again, if you're married, date your wife, date your husband. Make sure that you are wearing something that will be interesting for your wife or your husband. Make sure that you are carrying yourself properly. Look at your image. Look at your body language. These are things that are applicable all across the board, regardless of who you are or what situation you're in, whether you're in LA, Chicago, or Zimbabwe. I think all of these things are very much applicable. I wanted to thank everybody for coming on to our inaugural show, to our live taping of School of Human Potential Radio. You've been great. I look forward to many shows, and we're airing live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time. My name is Ellen Weisberg. Thank you again, and have a wonderful evening and a happy new year to everybody.
Thank you once again for listening to School of Human Potential Radio. We hope you enjoyed the program and are inspired to make a positive change in your life. For more information about the school, please like our Facebook page and visit www.schoolhp.com. To sign up for a session with Alan, please visit www.recalibrateyourlife.com or call 1-800-323-1619.